What is going on?
Nada, just sitting here doing a little reading.
Oh, you one of them reading type motherfuckers.
Every
Smarty odd motherfucker.
now and then. Every now and then.
Reading for knowledge and pleasure. Okay, all right, fine. You know, you think you better than me?
I'm old school like that.
Because you could just sit down and just open up a book and read for entertainment. All right, whatever.
Hey, you know what I've been looking at lately
What's that?
is Amazon has this program where you can just do book readings. You can just record your, you can just, you know, do voiceovers for books. Like, shit, what an easy way to make a little paper.
Oh, that's like they need people for audiobooks and you
Yeah.
just really.
I found this the other day. I'm like, oh shit, well, let me get on here and do some of this stuff. And then so they you go on the program and they give you just, first of all, you like you give all of your qualifications, et cetera. And then once you get past that bullshit, they give you just a list of a jillion things that need voiceovers. And then you know, you go in, they send you, they let you upload your audition. They give you like a paragraph or something like that to read for an audition, send it back to you. And if they want you, they'll let you know. And if not, you keep on moving. But there's so many of them, like, man, this is kind of cool.
Well, damn it, I am in. I'm trying to look this up as I talk, and I'm having difficulty because I only have enough brain power to do one thing at a time and barely do it competently. But a friend of mine, you know Dan Soder? You know Dan Soder.
Oh yeah, of course.
Dan Soder. So he used to do this radio show on Sirius called The Bonfire with Big J. Elkiston. So shout out to the homie Dan. After 7 years, he decided to step away and just focus more on stand-up comedy. But anyway, my point is they brought up, and actually they found this guy and interviewed him, but he's a brother in Chicago, and he writes these books that are just I can't describe them. And I'm trying to find it, but the titles are like I Fuck the Preacher or this bitch got rats and roaches in her apartment. And you can literally judge these books by the cover because the inside, the text of the book, the meat of the book is just as ratchet as the cover. So I'll bring all that up to say those are the books I want to do voiceovers for.
Beautiful.
But I just did it like I did a quick search of ghetto novels, and I've run across I Want to Read A Child of a Crackhead by Shameik A. Spate. But I think that it's a novel, so I think that might be somewhat serious. But oh, I gotta find. Oh, I wish I could remember the name of that author, because those are the books I want to read.
That is hilarious. I would love to dish. Well, to be clear, there are a handful of those books on there.
Oh, I bet.
There's a lot of porn books that people need voiceovers for, a lot of hood books. I'm like, yeah, I can do these.
Oh,
I can do these.
here's one. It's not the guy, but this is close. I want to do the voice work for He's My Thug, I'm His Peace, a gripping romance novel. That's got me written all over it, dog. Oh, here's one. Addicted to a Dirty South Thug. Oh yeah. Now we're getting somewhere. She's his drug, he's her thug.
I love this shit.
Written by Nirvana Black. And Black is spelled
BLAQ.
BLAUE. Yes,
Oh, okay, I
sir.
was close. I was close.
BLAQ.
That
So,
is beautiful.
yeah, man, I'm always looking to make a little extra beer money on the side. So,
Let me send you this.
yeah, man, good looking out.
Hang on, hang on. I think this right now.
I wish I could remember that guy's name. Let's see if I can text him.
I just texted it to you. But yeah, it's a little thing. You can they pay you either by the hour or they pay you by the job or whatever. It's a little paper, but you know, if you do enough of them, you can make a little cash and start to take a little vacation or something.
This is why the internet is like beer. It is the cause of and the answer to all of life's issues.
Man,
because it's just this real simple Google search of hood ghetto novels, and I have run across so many. Like, baby, please come home to me, a prison love novella. I'm not done.
Prison love novella.
Written by noted author Nikki Brown. That's Nikki with two K's and two I's.
Sweet.
He brings out the hood in me, 3. A Mahler family saga, which of course means...
This is a trilogy.
There were two previous iterations, exactly, of he brings out the hood in me. And I mean, this is why this hasn't been given the Nobel Prize for Literature. I don't know. Written by Jaquavius Coleman. Let me spell that. J-A-Q-U-A-V-I-S. Jaquavius, pardon me, not Jaquavius, Jaquavius. Because we strive for accuracy here on Quality Hang.
Jesus Christ.
The Dope Fiend, part 2 of the Dope Man's Trilogy. Jesus
I need to Christ. Get the movie rights to these books. I need the movie and film rights to these books.
And I'm only going to assume, because this has been proven to be a fact, that when... a series has 3 parts. When it's a trilogy, and this is a movie thing more than anything,
yeah,
the second of the 3 is normally the best movie out of the 3.
Yeah.
For example, Empire Strikes Back is thought of as the best of the 3 original Star Wars trilogies.
Facts.
Me personally, I'm a Return of the Jedi type dude, but listen, man... Empire Strikes Back is a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Godfather 2. Many people believe that Godfather 2 is superior to Godfather, The Godfather.
Yes.
And of course, we know that anything, of course, is superior to Godfather 3. So I say all that to say this. I can only assume, Marcus, that part 2 of the Dope Man's Trilogy is the superior of all 3 of the Dope Fiend books by Jaquavius Coleman.
That is a fair assumption. These things need to be on TV or in the theater post haste. I need to see this.
Oh yeah, I'm seeing all 3. 100%.
Who knew that we were really ready to bring back the black exploitation era?
Yo, wait a minute, hold on. Eviction notice, a hood rat novel. What the fuck? Yo.
Holy shit. Rod, you just give me my next TikTok series.
This is awesome.
Hood books.
And the people who love them.
Right.
Once again, you have stumbled on another edition of your favorite podcast. Indeed, it is Quality Hang. I am Rod Brooks. God. And as always, I am joined on this podcasting adventure by my partner in crime, the Dude. King of New Orleans, and soon to be the king of the new iteration, the 21st century version of blaxploitation cinema.
That's right.
He is Mr. Marcus Osborne. What's up, man?
Man, this has just made my morning. I could just literally go all day and find these titles.
We need to get busy on this before Tyler Perry does.
Oh my God, this is amazing!
And makes all the money off of this. Oh, did you see that? Either Tyler Perry, Byron Allen.
Oh who yes,
is a billionaire.
Yes,
I think Tyler Perry is, or damn close to.
He is.
And Sean Combs, whatever he's calling himself these days, they are trying to buy BET.
Yeah, That's wild.
From Viacom, but Viacom apparently doesn't see BET as the moneymaker that it once was. So one of those three guys are presumably going to end up as the owner of Black Entertainment Television.
Now, I think that's great.
Black Entertainment Television is going to be owned by a black person for the first time in what, maybe 30 years?
That is amazing. I mean, listen, to be honest with you, two of those three guys would actually make it fairly successful. I don't have much faith in Diddy, but but Tyler Perry, listen, Tyler Perry already half the programming on BET is Tyler Perry stuff now. So
I think that's Tyler Perry's point, is I'm already providing all of the programming for this channel. Why am I giving this away to other people? He's not giving it away. He's getting paid for it. But why am I giving this to other people when I could just do it all myself?
Yeah, man. And I think that BET has actually been really profitable for these dudes.
Absolutely. Oh, for Viacom? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, because it's cheap programming.
Yeah. I was trying to find this. Yeah, I know Paramount has lost money in general, mm-hmm. but I think BET was like one of the only things that was actually making money for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Insane. And listen, as a guy who 25 years ago when... God, is it 25 years? Yeah, man, 25 years when... I first started to see Tyler Perry's plays come to
mm-hmm.
town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, these plays seem fun. And everybody was going to the Tyler Perry, the Madea plays.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then he started making the movies. I'm like, oh, these movies are kind of whack. but let me say this about Tyler Perry. Over the past 5 years or so, you know, you peek back in to see how things are going, I guess is the way I would review it.
Sure.
This dude has been doing some really good work.
Yeah, Tyler Perry, it never really been my type of hype. But I've always thought that what he did and how he did it, to me, he did it the right way.
Yeah.
I think he did it with it was nothing exploitative about it. There was nothing in my mind that was wrong about it.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, it wasn't my thing, but I always thought it came from a good place. I always felt like what he was about giving black people something that they could relate to. Like, you know, black people, you know, we deserve, and I don't mean this in a negative way, we deserve sort of mindless entertainment too, you know, but we deserve it to be done in a way that is respectful of the audience in which it is trying to capture.
Yeah.
And I do think that he has been consistently across the board about that ideal, Tyler Perry, you know, since he burst on the scene, you know, all those many years ago. So I will always give Tyler Perry props. I'm not necessarily going to give him my money, but I'm always going to give him his props. And listen, you know, you go to Atlanta, or you know people from Atlanta, what that man has been able to do down there and what he's been able to build down there and the inroads he's been able to make for black people in Hollywood proper. Like I said, it ain't my deal, but you can't deny what he's been able to do over these past couple of decades or so. The man is a mogul, and how many of those can we talk about that are black?
Amen, dude. Amen. I kind of feel like I'm a TV movie dork, so I love all that stuff, and I would say that Tyler Perry, particularly, he provided something for Southern black folks.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Specifically that was like an untapped audience.
Yes, sir.
That Hollywood didn't understand and they didn't market to, and they didn't create product for. They didn't create content for. And so every time Tyler Perry puts a movie out, it's number one, and Hollywood is going, what the fuck? How did this happen? Like, he knows what the fuck he's doing. He puts out these movies, and they number one. And for like those first few years, Tyler Perry movies, every single one of them would come out and be the number one film, and Hollywood wouldn't know how to deal with that shit.
Yeah, he knows specifically what black people want and what they like. And he has turned that into an empire. And you can't front on that. And if you do front on it, that makes you a hater. Because it's undeniable what he's been able to pull off. So, yeah, I give him all the props in the world.
You know, what sucks is that, you know, for a number of years, probably for about 10, 15 years, he got a lot of shit from the so-called bougie artists. And
Spike Lee in particular, because he was kicking Spike Lee's ass at the box office.
Yeah, he was whooping his ass. And I think, though, that this is going to suck to say this, but I think that Oprah Winfrey kind of gave him, like, the thumbs up. Like, okay, this dude is cool. And his products are cool. Because that really, I think things really started to change and go Tyler Perry's way from that standpoint, from the artistic standpoint. Once he started, you know, kicking it with Oprah, that really changed a lot of I do believe for him, that partnership.
No, that 100% sounds familiar. And listen, let's keep it a buck. Oprah's the king.
Yeah.
I know she's a woman.
No, you're right.
So that would make her the queen.
Yeah.
Oprah's the queen and the king. When Oprah bless you,
yep,
you good. Yep. That you will enter the kingdom of heaven. It will be no problem for you. If Oprah ain't got time for you, Oprah not gonna blast you because it's Oprah. She ain't got time for that.
Yeah.
Oprah just won't fuck with you.
Yeah.
And if Oprah don't fuck with you, black folk don't fuck with you.
Yeah, it's kind of hard, man. It's kind of hard. You don't mess with Oprah.
No.
With Oprah, and you don't mess with Michelle Obama.
No. Absolutely not. Hey, you know who realized the power of Oprah and old boy been good ever since?
Who that?
Stedman.
Oh, yeah, man.
Stedman realized early. Hey, Stedman was basically on the ground floor like, I see where this is going. I see what this lady is capable of. Let me go ahead and hitch my wagon to this, because this lady is going places.
Stedman is not a fool.
No.
Do you remember that Chappelle bit where he was trying to be Oprah's husband?
Yeah. Dave, it's Oprah. I'm pregnant.
God, I missed that shit. It was so genius.
Oh, man. Back when Dave Chappelle was funny. Anyway, I mean, we've really gotten into it, so let's just go ahead and keep the train rolling. What else you got for us today, my man?
Well, this is interesting. Just the wokeism is, I think, just completely hilarious. And this thing has become such a phenomenon, such a weirdo. It's a really weirdo right-wing talking point now. Like, it's not even, like, annoying. It's just fucking weird, the obsession that they have with it. Like, anything they don't like is woke. And so, you know, recently, you know about this, obviously, the Silicon Valley Bank collapsed.
Yeah.
And these weirdos are blaming it on wokeness. It's so insane because they had, like, a gay person, they had a black person on their board. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, I mean, it's once again, it's what the right wing does and has done for years exceptionally well. They're very good at propaganda, and they're very good at using something that is good and turning it around and using it as a negative, you know, using it as a pejorative. And in this, you know, in this way, they've taken the word woke and they've weaponized it, which again is what they've done forever, basically. And because they have no shame, and because the people that they are courting are stupid,
Yeah.
It's very easy to take something and weaponize it when the people you are catering to, in this case, right-wing idiots, possess no critical thinking skills. Mm-hmm. Or if they do possess critical thinking skills, they choose not to critically think about things when it suits their own retrograde, nasty agenda. And right-wing idiots using the term woke is just another example of that. You know, we used to just say back in the day, stay woke, fam, which means literally stay awake, pay attention. Don't get caught slipping.
Don't let your guard.
Don't fall for the okie-doke. Don't fall for the banana in the tailpipe.
Yeah.
And that wasn't just stay woke because of what, you know, what white people might do to you. That's just stay woke, period.
Yeah.
Stay woke for what anybody might do to you. Well, you know, when we got to one of the flashpoints, one of the racial flashpoints in this country, once we got to the George Floyd protests, that's when right-wing idiots started to take the word woke and weaponize it. And that gets us to where we are right now with Silicon Valley Bank, which is just hilarious, but not in a good way. Or as you mentioned, Marcus, right-wing idiots are saying that the bank collapsed because it had a diverse executive staff, for lack of a better way of putting it, when, of course, it's not the case. It collapsed because our financial system is run by greedy assholes.
Yeah.
And here's something for you. You know, greedy and competent assholes can be white, black, transgender, gay, straight, non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a greedy asshole is not, even though it seems that way, the exclusive purview of white men.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, you just happen to have some people at Silicon Valley Bank who were just not good at the job they were tasked to do.
Well, and the implication is that, oh, if you just had all white people, this wouldn't have happened?
Yeah, because no financial crisis have happened in this country or around the world at the hands of white men.
Is that
none whatsoever? Yeah. The recessions we've had and the Great Depression back in the day.
Yeah.
That happened because of people of color. Like back in 1929, it was illegal for black people to basically have money. What are you talking about?
Who's had their hands on the levers of power for the past 250 years?
Forever.
It ain't been the Negro, I can tell you that. I can promise you that shit.
It hasn't been the lesbian female.
No.
What are you talking about? Yeah, so it's almost one of those where, again, if you have a brain, which most people do, you just pay it no mind when they try to blame wokeism for the Silicon Valley Bank collapse, because you just only a moron would believe that.
Well, there's a certain level of ignorance that is sometimes baffling. Like, no, but who the fuck even says anything is woke? Like, nobody's ever even used the term. Just like you said, nobody's ever even used it the way they use it. It's so weird. But these folks don't think, and they've managed to connect this word woke with almost anything they don't like or anything that makes them feel like their persecution complex is validated. Yep.
There was a video going around this week of a woman who was on a news program here in the United States. And the sister that was interviewing the lady that I'm about to talk about here set her up brilliantly, where she, in the middle of the interview, as this woman was promoting her dumb book, the sister who was interviewing said, well, since we're talking about it, can you describe what woke is or wokeism is?
Yeah.
And the lady she was interviewing, the dope she was interviewing, for seemingly a minute and a half, just stumbled and sputtered, and she couldn't explain what woke was.
Right.
Even though, and she admitted this as she was fumbling around for an answer as to what is woke or can you define woke, she said, it's something you can't define, even though there's a chapter dedicated to it in my book. You're just like, you moron. And the reason she couldn't explain or define woke is because there is no explanation for it other than we're using this, we've weaponized it to gain, for a means to an end.
Yeah, exactly.
But you couldn't say that because, well, that would be honest. And none of these people who operate in this place are honest about it.
That part gets old. I mean, and it's been old. Y'all are just literally sitting here making shit up.
Yeah.
Just making shit up.
But it works for the people that they are catering to because,
it does.
They're not critically thinking. They don't want
to. God, it does. And they don't, that's really the thing. They don't want to. They'd rather be placated to.
Yeah.
This mystery in sports, Andrew Wiggins. I got some thoughts on this, and I'm curious what you may think.
Lay it on me.
So, just the past week or so, this thing has come to a head. Now, Andrew Wiggins has been gone from the Golden State Warriors for reasons undisclosed. He's dealing with a private matter. It's for I guess a bit over a month now.
Yes.
And it's just come to a head recently where the speculation has been rampant, and more interestingly, is hearing so many talking heads go off about why we don't know what's going on with Andrew Wiggins. What is it? Why is this a secret? Why is it so quiet? Why can't he play ball? What is so bad that he can't get out there and ball out? And I've heard people saying these things in public, on the radio, on TV. I'm like, this is fucking strange. Like, I understand that we're nosy as fans and as outsiders. We're nosy. We want to know things. But Andrew Wiggins don't owe us shit. Nope. And these people are acting like he owes it to us to tell us what's wrong. We need a reason as to why he's not out there playing basketball. It ain't none of our business, man.
We are nosy, but more to the point, we are entitled.
Mm-hmm.
And that entitlement has led people to believe that they, as sports fans, they are important enough to know what is going on in Andrew Wiggins' life.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is baffling. The only people that Andrew Wiggins owes any explanation to are the Golden State Warrior players and the Golden State Warrior front office.
Yep.
And the coaches. That's where it stops. Full stop.
Yeah.
Fans, I don't care how much money you pay for tickets. I don't care how much money you gamble. I don't care how big of a supporter and how long of a supporter of the Golden State Warriors you are. You have no right and no expectation to know what's going on in Andrew Wiggins' life and how long he's going to be out. And our good friend Marcus Thompson of The Athletic did an excellent story about this where, and I'm paraphrasing the quote, the Warrior players said, we know what's going on.
Yeah.
We're okay with it. Everyone else doesn't matter. And that's the Big Six domino right there.
Facts.
That's the quote. And anybody else out there who's saying, well, we're the fans. We play a salary, which is a buffoonish thing to say.
Idiotic.
Because you don't.
No.
Well, we deserve some answer. We just want to know what's going on. We're just asking questions, which is another stupid thing to say. Because no, you're not just asking questions. You're being ridiculous.
Yeah.
Anyone who says that they're owed an explanation about this and you do not play for the Golden State Warriors or you do not run the Golden State Warriors, get a grip.
Yeah,
you're
man.
You're not that fucking important.
Not at all. And hearing some of these, I think more insulting to me was hearing some of these talking heads literally getting on air and coming up with these weird rationales as to why Andrew Wiggins should be sharing whatever is going on in his life. Well, if he just talks about it, well, then he can – Andrew Wiggins – and I heard someone say this. Andrew Wiggins can end all this right now if he just tells everybody what's going on.
Bullshit.
That way, we can either say, okay, we're with you, Andrew – our prayers are with you, or we can wonder, we can ask, we have the right to question why this is so important. I'm like, who the fuck do you think you are?
We have, because again, information is so easy to get due to the internet and smartphones or whatever. We have become not just a group in sports fans, not just a country, the United States, but we as just a global populace.
Yeah,
we have become so spoiled because information flows so easily and so freely and we can get it so quickly. Mm-hmm. We have become, like I said, entitled to where we think we need, because we basically feel like we can know everything about everyone and everything. We should know anything we want to about everyone and everything. And if we don't know, well, then something must be up. Yes. Well, no, in this case, and I'm a big fan of Occam's razor. I'm a big fan of the simplest explanation is probably the right and correct explanation.
Yep.
Andrew Wiggins is going through some serious shit.
Yep.
It's so serious that he and the people around him mm-hmm. realize the gravity of the situation, and they have the grace and understanding to allow Andrew Wiggins to deal with the serious shit he's dealing with, to allow him to deal with it on his own time.
Right.
And when their coworker and their friend and their brother is ready to come back, they will welcome him with open arms. And I found the quote from Marcus Thompson's story about this in The Athletic. The quote is, "If we're fine with it," one player said, "and the people who pay him understand,
yeah,
then so should everyone else." And who is everyone else? Me, you, and anybody who is or ain't listening to this podcast.
Amen. Amen. I think you nailed it. I think we've just reached sort of the apex of information availability, and we just kind of get to the point where, you know, we should just know it. We should just know what's going on in your life.
And if we don't know, you must be hiding something.
You
That's
must
wild.
Be hiding something.
we expect more from a basketball player who is clearly going through something. We expect more from him than we do from politicians or our local, state, or federal government. That's crazy to me.
It's insane how judgmental and harsh we are on these athletes, and we let these politicians do and say whatever the fuck they want to say and do. I think you nailed that shit, dude.
It's backwards, man.
You nailed it.
Backwards.
You got anything on the sports world?
March Madness, as we record this episode of Quality Hang, is just started. We're doing this on Thursday, March 16th. A little bit after 9 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time, and March Madness has just started. As I look to the television over my right shoulder, West Virginia and Maryland in an 8-9 matchup. Maryland being the higher seed, they're kicking off March Madness, and I have to tell you, boy, do I not care. We've talked about this before, and this is something you talk about, where in professional sports you just don't have great teams.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that, if it has to do, if not exclusively, with parity and free agency, that causes, I think, one of the main causes of parity in sports. But when you look at the NFL and the NBA and even Major League Baseball, the athletes and the gameplay is light years better than it was 20 years ago, and definitely beyond that. But you look at college basketball, and I think it's inevitable, even if it is unfair, I think it's inevitable to compare college basketball to pro basketball because it's basically the same game. You watch a pro basketball game, and the skill level is off the charts, particularly the shooting.
Yeah.
Then you watch a college basketball game, and it is a clank fest. They have to repaint the rims after every half because they can't shoot.
No.
And again, we're talking about college athletes. We're talking about unpaid laborers. It's a slower game. It is just a less skilled game compared to, fairly or unfairly, the NBA. But I liken it to, you know how you're on the highway and let's just say you're able to drive 80 miles an hour. And then all of a sudden you see a police officer, you got to slow down to 68.
Yes.
And it feels like you're going 3 miles an hour. you watch a college game after watching an NBA game, and you're just like, what is this? But college basketball just ain't got that thing no more. You go back to it. It wasn't that long ago. You know, the 80s were golden era for college basketball, especially because of the rise of the Big East. You had great college basketball played in the 90s. But you get here to the 21st century, especially where we are right now in 2023, who's the best player in college basketball? The best team in college basketball? Who are the good coaches in college basketball right now? It's just the sport itself, for me, just doesn't have that same oomph that it had once before. And I have completely, completely lost touch with it.
Rod, you are echoing things I've been saying for 25 years. I ain't gonna lie. I love the tournament. I have always loved the tournament. But I've always been open with people saying, I don't give a rip about college basketball until tourney time. Mm-hmm. And mainly for the reason you just gave. College basketball, like people who watch college basketball throughout the year, I don't know how they do it. Oh, it is, it is, and it's not changed. It's god-awful, terrible basketball. And until you get to the tournament where you actually get to see some good teams play, you don't waste any time watching college basketball otherwise. Unless you play for a team, or unless you know somebody who played for a team. Like, that was my nephew played for Southeast Louisiana Tech State or whatever the fuck it is. You don't pay attention to that shit because it's trash.
Brother, let me point something out here. And it's, like I said before, I got the tournament on right now. First game of the 2023 NCAA Men's Division I Basketball Tournament.
Yeah.
Maryland, West Virginia. It's an 8-9 matchup.
Yeah.
Now, before I get to my point, when it comes to the seedings, once you get past the top three in each of the regions, the seedings almost don't matter. It's just marketing. It's just so people can say, you know, if West Virginia, a 9, beats Maryland, people go, well, that's an upset. And it's not really an upset.
Not really.
Because because these two teams are basically evenly matched. And West Virginia, if you look at it from a point spread standpoint, and I don't know, but West Virginia could be favored. So if West Virginia beats Maryland, which is entirely possible in this game, that's not an upset. West Virginia's favored in this possibly hypothetical scenario I'm talking about. So miss me with this upset thing, but that's one of the things that we have been conditioned to when it comes to college basketball. Like, oh, Cinderella and upsets. Like, when you look at it, the chalk rules in college basketball. Mm-hmm. You might get some upsets the first couple of days. Mm-hmm. You might have the one odd situation where a lower seed has a good run in the tournament. But for the most part, the winner of this is normally, if not exclusively, one of the top three seeds in its region or in the tournament overall. But I say all that to say this. So West Virginia 13, Maryland 4. Okay, they just had a timeout. 11:49 left in the first half. Maryland, an 8 seed, has 4 points. Marcus, they've gone scoreless over the last 6 minutes and 30 fucking seconds of this game. Maryland has not scored a point, single point in 6 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Not a three-pointer, not a layup, not a mid-range jump shot, not a free throw in 6 minutes and 30 seconds of a game that has 11 minutes and 49 seconds left in the first half. Good God, that's awful.
Yeah, it's pretty unwatchable. But, like, more power to them.
Wait, I'm looking at the stats. I'm sorry. 4 points, 6 field goal attempts, 6 turnovers for Maryland. Come on. I wouldn't watch them play in my kitchen.
This is the whole thing. That tournament, as great as it is the gambling on the tournament, obviously, with all these things, is what's really made this the phenomenon that it is, right? And so you have these teams in here who really – and they're talking about expanding the field to, like, 90-something.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, do we need this? Well, we don't need this. The gamblers need it. The networks need it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need it. It's not gonna stop Duke from being number one seeded. It's just not. It's not gonna change anything. It's just and I'll say this even about college football. I can't watch college football when they play these trash ass teams.
Yeah.
And most college sports, pretty bad unless you're in the power conferences.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Well, college football, they're understanding this, and that's why you've seen just these seismic changes in college football, you know, like USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten, Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC with these giant conferences, particularly the SEC and the Big Ten have figured out is that no one wants to watch, and the television partners, you know, Disney with ESPN and CBS and NBC, they don't want to pay to watch Alabama bludgeon Austin Peay.
No.
But they will pay big money to see Alabama and Texas play on the regular. They will pay big money to see USC and Ohio State play on the regular. So college football, we're getting to a point now where they're just going – it's just going to be like a 64-team – these are the college football teams.
Yeah,
they will play and they will play meaningful games, and eventually a champion will be crowned. That's why the college football playoff expanded from 4 teams to 12 teams.
Yeah,
and we're eventually going to get to 16 teams once everything shakes out with conference realignment and killing off some conferences like the Pac-12. You know, it might be on its deathbed right now, and the ACC is probably not going to be too far behind. We're going to get a 16-team football tournament, and we're going to get consolidation of these big schools that want to compete in big-time college football. And I think the sport is going to be better off for it. In college basketball, it is just – it's almost a free-for-all, and they realize that their product is not very good. So the one thing that they have that they can sell that no one else can sell in American sports is we put on this tournament in March. It lasts for 3 weeks. And people vibe on it because you can gamble on it. It's 3 weeks of constant programming. If we can juice it up and add some more teams to it, we know that CBS and Turner and maybe Apple or Amazon in the future, they're going to pay for these games, and we can make more money that way. They've already admitted that the regular season in college basketball is trash.
Of course it is.
Because, well, indeed, it is trash.
It's absolutely garbage. Basura. Nobody wants to watch that shit.
No.
As a great person once said, ain't nobody trying to hear that.
No. So. Miss me with that bullshit.
I am looking forward to all the changes. I'm not bitching about it. I don't give a fuck about the traditions. Change it. Make it more entertaining, make it better, make it more competitive. And I'd love to see HBCUs involved in this in a really big way, because this is the type of thing that would help HBCUs.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Not harm them.
No, that's a very good point. When the college basketball tournament expands, and it will expand, that will be a boon, I think, for HBCUs, because they will – the 96 teams –
yes.
You're going to have some HBCUs in that bad boy. And they're not going to be just
goddamn right,
you know, token appearances like we normally see. You know, Texas Southern, they got in from the SWAC, and they got bounced out in one of the first 4 games. And I think there's a couple of more HBCUs in there. I forget who it is because, again, I don't pay attention to college basketball.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm with you on that one. It would be – I think it would be greatly beneficial to HBCUs.
Hell, yeah.
They need all the shine they can get, and they deserve
it. Hell, yeah. You know how many more kids you get if they find out they're going to be on TV?
A lot.
Man, look.
A lot. Mom and them going to see me on TV?
Yeah.
Sign me up.
That's right. Now if we can just get some of the alumni to make some donations, they'll be on top of things.
You know what I would like to see happen for the HBCUs? I would like for them to be funded in their respective states as robustly as the predominantly white institutions
are.
But that's a different conversation for
preach
another time.
I got one more sports thing.
Lay it on me.
Steph Curry is officially old.
What?
35 years old.
Oh, I thought you meant old, like he can't play anymore.
No, definitely not saying that.
Because he dropped 50 last night. Now, it was in a loss, but it was a 50 where he was getting anything he wanted except trips to the free throw line.
I think I've made this clear to you. Like, my favorite basketball player of all time has always been Magic Johnson, and that really hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. But boy, I love Jordan. Magic and Jordan were my guys. Barkley was my dude. Dr. J was my first basketball superhero.
Sure.
But this Steph Curry kid, man, this dude blows me away. Not only the way he plays, which is remarkable, but the size that he is walking around with, that frame, the fact that he's been able to play 14 years and getting the dog shit kicked out of him every night by big dudes. The fact that this guy is, you know, this guy's a better rebounder than Kobe Bryant. Like, that's insane.
Man, you better watch it. Them Kobe stands are like Tupac stands.
Yeah.
They hear you talking bad about their king. They are relentless.
Yeah, I liked Kobe a lot, but I don't put Kobe in my top three players of all time. I think that's ridiculous.
No.
Yeah, but they would like, no, he's the second. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
No, he's not. No, he's not.
But, like, just watching him play, and I have a lot more respect for him, obviously. I've gained a lot more respect for him, obviously, over the past decade than I did initially. I thought he'd be a fun player to watch coming out of Davidson. And I remember actually going on air when I was doing a show over at that sports station on the FM dial. I was doing the show over there, and I actually went on air and I said, you know, I like Steph Curry. And they gave him $44 million? Are you crazy?
No, he's underpaid.
Yeah, I'm like, are you crazy? They can't build a team around this guy. He's too small. And boy, was I wrong.
You weren't the only one.
Boy, was I incorrect. But our guy Mark Spears to this day, when Mark Jackson got there, Mark Jackson's second year, and I said to Spears, I said, listen, these Warriors are going to be a problem for the next few years. I said, what are you talking about? I said, oh, they'll be in the playoffs this year. He said, you're crazy. I said, nope. These dudes, they have talent, dude. They're going to be there. And sure enough, they went there and went on that run. So I'm going to hold that over Mark because he laughed me in my face. Laughed in my face. But, like, Steph Curry at 35 years old, watching that dude ball out last night, this is insane.
Yeah, I mean, he's as good as he ever was. And remember, this guy is a two-time MVP and was a unanimous MVP. I think it was his first MVP. Maybe it was second. I don't know. But he was a unanimous MVP. Thank you, in his second one. Yeah. And for him to be at 35 years old, he's bigger, he's stronger, he's still got that crazy range. His around-the-rim game is spectacular. He's a much better finisher now than he was even 5-6 years ago. As you mentioned, he gets rebounds. He does it all. And
yeah. Six boards a game, Rod. It's 6-2.
As a point guard. Point guards are not supposed to do that. I know the game has changed, but point guards are not supposed to do that.
No.
Yet he does it. There were a lot of people, myself included, who thought that Steph Curry coming out of Davidson was just going to be a nice little possibly novelty player. What he has become is revolutionary, and he's one of the greats of all time. Not the greatest shooter of all time. He is that. I'm talking about one of the great players of all time. And I understand that this is a very silly, subjective argument, but when you're talking about greatest players of all time, I mean, he's, to me, easily top 10. And if you wanted to make him top 5,
ooh,
I'm going to listen to what you have to say.
Ooh.
I think he's that good. Ooh. I think with the what he's done in his career and what he could possibly do in his career.
Yeah.
I get it's a different era. The rules are in favor, I should say, of offensive players. I've watched a lot of basketball, Marcus, just like you watched a lot of basketball, and your basketball heroes are similar to and of the same era of my basketball heroes. I'm not a prisoner of the moment, man.
No.
He's that good.
No,
he's
that great. He could play with any of those guys, period. It just what an amazing career. His defense has gotten much better. I watched Steph last night playing defense. Like, look at this dude.
Yeah.
Like, he was up on Paul George. Like, get out of here. Look at Steph. At 35 years old, still out here balling hard, playing hard, and just as unstoppable as ever. Some of those shots he was making, you just laugh. You know when somebody's so good, you just laugh when they make a shot?
And they're good shots.
Yeah.
They're good shots. He's the only player in the history of the league.
No.
He's the only player in the history of the league where you have to not show or give token pressure when he crosses half court.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be on him when he crosses half court.
Yes. Yeah.
There is no other player in the history of the NBA that you can say that about. Now, Damian Lillard is there now.
Yeah.
But that's because of what Steph
yes.
has been able to do. And that's not to throw shade at Damian Lillard at all. Damian Lillard is a great player in his own right.
No,
but
yeah.
Steph being dangerous across half court is something that started with Steph Curry.
Yes.
No one else.
He got
no
into,
one
he,
else.
He came into the league doing that shit. And you actually mentioned it really quickly in your description of his game. This dude can get to the hole with anybody who's ever played.
Anybody.
And when you look at his true shooting percentage, I looked this shit up the other day. This guy is in the top eight of all time. Steph Curry is.
He could get any shot he wants on the floor from the time he gets in the gym.
It's crazy, Rob.
That's how good he is.
It's crazy. And by the way, if you look at that list, if you ever get the chance to look at the list of the guys who are in that top 10 true shooting percentage of all time, only Steph Curry is under 6'8". Hmm. Everybody else is like a 7-footer. It's insane how efficient that's what it is. He's the most efficient basketball player I've ever seen.
So an NBA court is 94 feet long. Steph Curry, he is able to get what he wants for 45 feet. you got to worry about Steph Curry. You got to worry about one guy for 45 feet
yeah.
of hardwood.
Yeah.
You had to worry about Wilt Chamberlain for 8 feet. You had to worry about Kareem for 15 feet.
Yeah, 15 feet.
15 to 18. Yeah. Right? If the Skyhook was really cooking, you had to worry about him from 18.
Yep.
You had to worry about Mike from the hoop to
18. 15 20, to 18 with
let's
Mike.
Let's say 20 feet. If that turnaround was really cooking.
If it was hot.
You'd have to worry about him from 20 feet. Okay? I just named three of the unquestioned greatest basketball players mm-hmm. of all time. And you had to worry about them from the hoop out to 20 feet. You have to worry about Steph from the hoop past 23 feet 9 inches, the three-point line.
Insane.
Past the hash, which is 27 feet. You have to worry about Steph Curry from 30 feet out consistently.
Man.
Yeah. That's bananas.
And the fact that he's – the volume of three-point shots he takes and the fact that he – this year I think he's at 44%.
Come on,
he's
dog.
44%.
He makes almost half of his shots.
Are you fucking kidding me?
From 23 feet 9 inches and beyond. All right. Okay. All right.
44% from three. And he's actually at 50% field goal percentage for the entire year.
I mean, it's remarkable. He's not just some little joke. He's not just a product of the new NBA and its rules favoring the offensive players. He's one of the greatest of all time. Like I said, he's easily top 10. And if you want to talk about the top five, I'm willing to listen, and I'm probably not going to put up much argument.
And thank God that he did come along, because this would have gotten boring if it was just the LeBron era.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It would have been really, really boring.
No.
I mean, that's kind of one of my sort of misgivings about the about 90s basketball. It was just the Jordan era. And really, it wasn't even close.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even close. And so I like that, you know, the 80s we had Bird versus Magic. We also had Dr. J in there as well towards the end of his career. And I like having this LeBron Curry thing. And I hope we see. I'm just wondering who are the next generation's superstars going to be? And when I say superstars, because we use that word very loosely in sports, there are athletes who are superstars within their sports. And then there are superstars that are transcendent. And that in the NBA, really, four at the most. And I'm thinking Curry, LeBron, maybe Kevin Durant. And I really can't think of anybody else who's like on a global scale. Or the average person can go, I don't watch basketball, but I know who that is.
You're missing one guy in particular, and I think you're missing a couple of guys.
Who we got?
Maybe three. Giannis, first and foremost. Come on now.
Giannis, listen, Giannis is great.
Come on. Don't do it. Don't do it. Come on now.
Listen to what I'm saying. Giannis is great, and Giannis is a superstar and literally one of the greatest players in the world. What I'm saying is, if I show a picture of Giannis Antetokounmpo to someone who doesn't follow basketball, will they go, oh, yes, Giannis? And that's what I mean by guys who are transcendent of their sport. Like, the average person who doesn't watch basketball probably knows who LeBron James is.
Well, I mean, but LeBron James is LeBron James.
What? But that's what I'm saying. That's my whole point.
He's iconoclastic. He's
That's my point, though. That is my point.
He's almost bigger than the game itself. As much as I love Steph, Steph is a basketball player first. LeBron is global phenomenon. LeBron James, who happens to be a basketball player. I don't know if it's necessarily something we can compare. I mean, LeBron, just in terms of popularity, is LeBron. The rest are just mere mortals.
Well, that's true. But again, my point is, how many of the NBA players do folks who don't watch the NBA know who they are?
Yeah, but how many of those people exist globally in sport, period? You have LeBron, you have Ronaldo, Messi.
Yes.
Maybe Lewis, not maybe, definitely Lewis Hamilton.
Sure.
Probably some cricket player I have no idea about. Tiger Woods.
And Steph is in that group as well. Remember, Steph is one of the most popular athletes in the world. I mean, basketball is one of the top four sports in the world.
Yeah, but no, you're right. But it's because of basketball. It's not necessarily transcendence. He's transcended on the basketball court. But I think people like LeBron, people like Messi are just they're
Messi is yeah
those transcendent.
The soccer guys. I mean, that's a whole different level altogether. Like those soccer dudes, that's a level of worldwide popularity that I don't know if any hoop player can match, other than Michael Jordan.
Lewis Hamilton too. I mean, considering that dude spends the majority of his time with a helmet on and you don't see his face.
Lewis Hamilton.
Lewis Hamilton is that dude in terms of global popularity and cashing in on it.
Yeah, man. I don't know if we'll ever reach like world athletes popularity, if it'll ever hit like Muhammad Ali status ever again. Because that was something insane that we may never see again. Or Pele.
Yeah.
Type of shit. We may never see that again. But still.
Those were different dudes in a different era. You're right about
that. Yeah. Yeah. But I just think it's fascinating to watch guys like that. And I love seeing it. I just wonder if the NBA has, you know, the guys who can take over after those guys are gone, after LeBron. I mean, obviously they'll have somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that face of the game type of player that Jordan was, that Magic and Bird were, that Steph and LeBron are. It's going to be tough to cover them. Because even Tim Duncan, as amazing as he was, he didn't light any fires in people.
Well, he didn't want to do that.
You're right.
He just wanted to hoop, to go back home, read comic books, and then retire to the Virgin Islands, and swim all day. I think the league is in good hands with Giannis and Embiid. and Luka and Jokic and possibly John Morant when he gets his shit together and possibly a couple other guys. I think the league is in good hands because first and foremost, for those guys to become globally transcendent, you need to be great basketball players. And those are the guys that I mentioned.
Are
great basketball players. And eventually, you know, once Steph and LeBron, you know, once these guys are done, those guys are going to win. That's a good point because they can still play and still viable. But those guys will eventually, you know, win titles. And, you know, winning is what makes you popular, not just here, but around the world. Let's keep this bad boy moving. What else you got for us?
One more pop culture take.
Yep.
To close us out. The Oscars were last week. Last Sunday.
I heard.
And I just found it interesting. This is like and it's funny because I was actually in a bar watching the Oscars with my wife's aunt. And some guy walked up to us and he goes, "Are you guys really watching this?" I'm like, "Yeah, we are." He's like, "Really? You're really watching it?" "Yeah, man, we are." "Oh, I can't believe it." "Yeah, believe it. We're sitting here watching it, and you can go on so we can finish watching it." And he goes, "Wow, you really take this seriously?" Like, "Well, man, it's not a matter of me taking it serious or not. It's just that I don't know you, and I feel like you're coming over here trying to make a value judgment on what kind of TV we're watching when you're in a bar drunk." And so we were like really intrigued into it, watching it as we always do. Like, we used to throw Oscar parties. We used to do the whole red carpet thing and all that shit. It was fun. We had the brackets out so people could bet and make money on it. But obviously with the Oscars, there's always controversy. Nobody got slapped this year. But one thing in particular kind of rubbed a lot of folks the wrong way. Jamie Lee Curtis won her first Oscar ever. I think it was her first time being nominated, too. Maybe her second. I think it was her first time ever.
Was she finally recognized for her brilliant performance in Trading Places? Did they give her an Oscar retroactively?
Man, they should have done that. They should have fucking done that because she was genius in that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Please. As was the entire cast, by the way. "I've been waiting for you, Billy Ray." I love that.
"Who put their cools out on my couch?" Anyway, as you were saying, yes.
"Don't get me started on Trading Places, man. That's my flick." But Jamie Lee Curtis won his Oscar, and she won Best Supporting Actress, and she won it over Angela Bassett, and she won it over Stephanie Hsu, who was also in the same film as Jamie Lee, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And a lot of people were up in arms because Angela Bassett, they feel like she was robbed. They feel like Stephanie Hsu, she was robbed, and Jamie Lee didn't deserve that Oscar. And this is one of those times where I'm going, we taking this shit a little too serious. Like, let this woman live, man. She won. Let her live. It's fine. It's not the end of the world. We don't have to be making fucking death threats and writing think pieces about why she won. Like, some of this shit y'all gotta let go and just enjoy it for the pure pageantry and entertainment and mindless entertainment that it is. We gotta stop putting this. I think that I don't think awards are everything. I should say that. I don't think they're everything. I think they are fun. I think that it's fine if you have them. I think it's okay if you don't win them. I think long-term, your value as an artist probably won't be determined by whether or not you win an Oscar, because there's plenty of great artists who haven't won them, who haven't won awards. But the emphasis and the blowback and the vitriol directed at Jamie Lee Curtis and the Academy for voting this woman as best actress is insane. What are we doing?
Well, it's a couple of things. I want to first quote the great Eddie Vedder when Pearl Jam got an award. I think it was an MTV Video Award. Might have been a Grammy, but an award. And he said, I'm paraphrasing, but giving awards out for art is stupid because art is subjective.
Yes,
and he's 100% right.
Yeah.
But we're going to continue to do it because it is at this point rote tradition. The Oscars, the Grammys, the BET
Tony,
Awards are never going to go away. So, but on principle, the Oscars and award shows are stupid. Now, saying that, the Angela Bassett thing and Jamie Lee Curtis thing, that's all about, and this anger, I think, was misdirected hostility towards Jamie Lee Curtis. She just happened to catch the fire because she won over, people believe, a deserving Angela Bassett. But people are upset about Angela Bassett not winning for her role in Black Panther 2 as T'Challa's mother. No. People are upset because they think she was worthy because it was such a fantastic performance. Yeah. But also they think she should have gotten an award prior, most notably, for when she portrayed Tina Turner.
Yeah.
What's love got to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
So this is another case, and this is you know, and I'll just keep it real, this is a Black thing, and I understand it, is that how many times have we seen deserving Black actors and actresses be ignored, or in some people's opinion, outright robbed by the Academy? Let me list some examples.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Murphy in Dreamgirls? Yeah, Dreamgirls.
Mm. Who won that year?
I don't remember. I know it wasn't Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
He eventually won, and I think he's won twice, but Denzel Washington for Malcolm X.
Definitely. 100%.
He eventually won for Training Day, where he had to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
But Malcolm X, which arguably is his greatest performance, he didn't win for that.
Yeah.
So Black people look at that and go, it's just another example of an artist who should have won prior being nominated once again,
mm-hmm.
putting forth a great performance once again, not being recognized by the Academy. And they're going, well, shit, what else does she have to do?
Yeah.
So I think that's where a lot of the anger about Angela Bassett losing came from. You know, we're very protective of our heroes. And Angela Bassett is definitely seen as one of our heroes.
100%.
So people feel for Aunt T, you know, that she didn't win because what the hell else she got to do? Does she have to play a prostitute? Does she have to play a blind person? Yeah. You know, does she have to play someone who's mentally disabled? what does she have to do?
Well, you watch. I mean, what's going to end up happening is the next time she's nominated, she'll win.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully, but
it's a make good. It's like a ref making a bad call.
Right. Well, but that's what people were hoping for this time, and it didn't happen. Yeah. So how many more how many more bad calls do we have to see made before the right call or the makeup call is made?
Yeah.
But the overarching point is this, and it's the same thing I say about the Baseball Hall of Fame or all of the halls of fame.
Yeah.
I don't need a museum to tell me if I saw greatness. Yeah. I don't need it to validate what I saw. I don't need a statue to tell me if I saw a great acting performance. I know it's important to the actor or actress, but I'm talking about as a consumer of the art, I don't need an Oscar to be given to an artist or a piece of art. I don't need that to validate what I saw.
Yeah. And that's really what it boils down to. And that's why
it's just, like, it's not that important.
There's plenty of great artists who haven't won awards, and that's okay. At least their work lives on in perpetuity. So folks can always see it and revere it. And hopefully enough people will talk about it and show some deference to those folks in the future so that people don't miss their work.
Yeah.
That's all I got, Rob B.
I want to wrap it up.
Go ahead.
With something that, again, I'm a reporter at heart. And I feel it is important for me to report these things. Don't laugh. It is important for me to report these things because we have an issue in this country. I told you about the recent spate of animal nappings zoos around the country. You had the situation in Dallas. Situation in Houston, situation in Louisiana, the situation in New York City. Well, I don't have an animal zoo caper to tell you about, but I told you, man, these animals out here, they ain't fucking around because because they know that human beings are up to no good. We've been menacing them, and we're seeing story after story of these animals saying, "Now we done with this bullshit." What was it last week? The gator in Florida that caught the old lady and a little dog slipping. Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, let me give you something here real quick.
Come on now.
And quite frankly, I didn't know that these animals got down like that. Police in Circleville, Ohio, called to a rural property where they found a man on the ground in front of a herd of zebras.
Come on, man.
He was hemorrhaging blood below his right elbow. Was he hemorrhaging blood below his right elbow? Because a male zebra nearly bit off this man's arm. This man had a herd of zebras in the middle of fucking nowhere, Ohio. And this male zebra was ostensibly protecting its harem of female zebras. Ronald Clifton got too close to the male zebra, and the male zebra said, "Oh, word, you think shit is sweet?" And he got to biting the 72-year-old man's arm. Well, the police showed up, as I mentioned. They saved the man. And of course, because he's at least half black, the male zebra was shot and killed by the police.
Man, this is crazy. What the fuck is... I didn't know they had a herds of zebras like that in Ohio.
Ohio's a weird place, dog. And, like, you know, Texas and Florida and California, you know, get a lot of run for being weird places.
Oh, yeah.
Quiet is kept. Ohio is weird as fuck.
Yeah, yeah. That I know. You know what else is weird? Since we're talking about weird-ass states? Missouri.
Yeah, Missouri's wild.
Holy shit. What a trash bin.
Yeah. Racist, but not racist enough to join the Union join the Confederacy back in the Civil War. But it has all of all of the things that makes a Confederate-like state, and it still has it here into the 21st century.
So fucking strange. Like, it's kind of like Louisiana. Like, if you didn't go to Kansas City or St. Louis, you don't really need to be there.
No, you ain't lying, my brother. Missouri. Hey, listen, Missouri touches Arkansas. They are very similar. Very similar. So let this be a warning to all of you out there. It ain't sweet with these zebras. I didn't know zebras was out there biting folks like that. I thought if it's a zebra, right? It's like a horse.
That's a horse.
What do horses do when they get mad? A horse will kick the shit out of you. I saw a guy get kicked by a horse. It's wild.
It ain't pretty.
Oh, yeah. Oh man, he caught that. He caught them hooves, back hooves.
It ain't pretty.
All in his front. It ain't pretty, and it makes quite the sound. But I was expecting when I was reading the zebra story, because you know I got a Google alert set for animal mishaps. Clearly, because I've ended now the last four podcasts,
Jesus Christ,
animal related stories. But I was expecting a zebra, like, okay, you know, he just stomped old boy out to within an inch of his life.
Jesus.
When I read that the male zebra protecting his ladies was like, I'm finna to chomp the shit out of this dude and damn near bit old boy's right arm off below
Jesus
the elbow.
Right.
Hey man, you ain't never gonna get me near any zebra. Not that I spend a lot of time around zebras anyway, but if I'm ever in this position, like, hey man, you want to go check out the zebras? Like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah, well, dude, again, who knew there was a fucking herd of zebras around in the United States just kind of roaming aimlessly?
No, this guy has zebras.
Wait a minute. Where are these fucking zebras coming from?
I don't want to cause a panic. We don't have herds of wild zebras
just
roaming the Midwest looking to bite the shit out of people. No. This guy who had these zebras, again, we want to put his name out there because clearly he's an idiot. 72-year-old Circleville, Ohio resident Ronald Clifton. This guy, for whatever reason, just had a herd of zebras. So let this be a cautionary tale. Hey, man, let's leave these zebras alone. Okay? Leave them alone.
A herd of zebras in my back. It's so hilarious. What are we getting from? How big are zebras?
I mean, they're horses.
Are they bigger than the average horse, though? Like, I'm trying to think of, have I ever seen a zebra as an adult in person? I don't think I have, Rod.
I mean, to me, it just looks like something, really, when you think about it, you just don't want to fuck with it.
No, I don't. And I guess I'm curious because, like, you think of, like, a wolf, and everybody thinks of a wolf as just like a dog, but a wolf is huge.
Yo, man, yeah, wolves, they got size.
Huge.
Yeah.
And so I thought, like,
people look at a husky and go, oh, it's a wolf.
Yeah.
Then you see a wolf and go, oh, no, that's a wolf.
Yeah. That is a wolf. Like, holy shit. And so I'm like, maybe is the horse like that? Like, people don't, like a moose. People don't realize how big a moose is.
Yeah, man.
A moose is fucking gigantic.
Gigantic.
And they look like these harmless little creatures. Like, no, those things are giants.
No. You think it's all slick and greasy because you saw Bullwinkle as a kid. they call male mooses bulls for a reason.
That's right. Right? That's right.
Leave them alone.
And it's not important.
Hey, what?
What? Anyway.
No. Hey. All right. On that note, yes. It's not just the name of the podcast. When we get together, it's a weird quality hang.
Yeah.
Make sure you follow us on all the socials and email us. Email us your best zebra stories.
I love to hear them.
Hang. pod@gmail.com. All right, my brother. It's been a stone groove as always.
Yes, indeed, my guy.
It's a stone groove, my man.
When you came in here,
you was crying like a pussy. Trading Places should have won the Oscar for Best Picture when it came out in 1983. Yeah. It is a cinematic classic that clearly does not get the recognition that it deserves. Mm-hmm. I love you, my brother. We'll talk again.
Love you back, man. Let's do it again.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. And as always, be good or be good at it. See ya.